4 today as we finish that short series, looking at some of the things that steal our joy in this life. The key verse is found in verse 7, and the main concern is identified in verse 6 of Philippians 4. Philippians 4, verse 6, do not be anxious about anything, but by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. The fourth worry stealers, joy stealer in this book is worry. Our being anxious about things. And verse 7 gives us the answer. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And so it's the secure mind, the writers would call it, the secure mind. You have surety about life because God is your sovereign Lord. And His sovereignty gives us the ability to see life differently, to respond differently. And we'll see in the verses that our mind and our heart are linked, probably more in this chapter than any other chapter in the New Testament. What we think gets to our heart, our emotions. And so right thinking helps us to have right living. And it's coupled with the ability to be prayerful. To be prayerful and think right, and then we live right as it relates to anxiety or worry. We studied worry probably the first month I was here in February. It's one of the things that we saw from the parable of the sower, worries of this life that caused 2 out of 3 who received the seed with joy not to bear lasting fruit. Worries of this life takes hold of many young Christians and even older Christians. And so the text is going to reinforce some of the things that Matthew 6 would teach us in response to the fact of worries of this life. It's a big deal. It matters. Let me repeat a few things just to say them and go specifically to the verses of this chapter. We usually worry over things that we have no control over. And we usually worry about things that don't even happen. And then we usually worry about things that cause us to lose the joy that we could have today. So just imagine we're worrying about something that might happen tomorrow. We lose the joy of today. And worrying about something that I can't control if it happens tomorrow. And if it's going to happen tomorrow, sometimes it's not. And the bottom line is, Matthew 6 tells us, if we're that kind of person, we're living as if we're a pagan. And in the context of Matthew 6, the word Gentile is used. But what it means to us is we're acting as if there's no God. We give things to God and we quit worrying. And if we don't give it to God, if we act as if He can't handle it or He doesn't have the power to do anything about it or whatever it might be, we're acting as if there's no God in our life. So it's not a pretty picture from a spiritual point of view to be a person who spends an inordinate amount of time worrying about things. Now, it's not the same as having concern. We should be concerned about things and people and circumstances. Those three things that we've seen already in chapters 1, 2, and 3 that steal our joy. It's all right to be responsible people. And we have concern about things, but that's very different than being someone who's worrying. And those who spend a great deal of time worrying, it affects their physical body. Headaches, ulcers, lack of joy, obviously, but the concern that just wears you down. It affects your physical health. So there's a lot of variances there, John. And you lose your sleep. Someone made the comment, we can buy sleep at the drugstore, but we cannot buy rest. And it's very different. I've taken melatonin for a number of years to help me sleep at night, and I'm discovering other things that help me get that extra bit of sleep. And it's nice. It's a blessing to be able to go to bed and get a good night's rest, to wake up feeling rested. But some of that is because we have confidence in God and we don't spend our night twisting and turning mentally about those things. Remember, we have no control. They usually don't happen. They steal the joy we could have today, and it's acting as if there's no God in our life. Tommy?
So I've heard a good example of how this should work. For example, when you go on a cruise, you don't sit and worry that the captain is steering the ship right. You don't sit and worry that the people below decks are taking care of the engine. You don't sit. You turn those things over to the crew because you trust that they know what they're doing.
Yep. And be sure the pecan pie is good. But yes, and it's not to suggest that we're irresponsible and we don't care and we're not disciplined and we don't have concerns about people. Having a concern, which is acknowledging a reality in your life and in someone else's life, and having a concern would cause you to think better and to give it to God and certainly turn to God in prayer. Give it to God, that concern that you have. It's just amazing the times that it's the idea. It finds itself expressed in our lives sometimes when we say, I worried about this thing for weeks and I finally just turned it over to God. And I've heard people say that. I've heard them express that. I worried about this for weeks, and I finally just turned it over to God. And what is God up there thinking? It's about time. I could have handled this 90 days ago, or giving you some rest from this situation long ago. We usually give it to God last. We worry about it, we try to manage it, we try to figure it out, and when we can't, we finally turn it over to Him. It's backward. It's backward in our thinking sometimes from the idea of what we would want to do. Worry is a futile thing. One writer said it's something like rocking chair. You can keep it occupied, but it's not going to get you anywhere. It's like a rocking chair. I like the statement of Alice Caldwell Rice. I had my umbrella there by my Bible and my notes this morning, and I decided not to bring it, because some people are superstitious about opening an umbrella inside a building. And I didn't want to have to deal with that. So I figured I'll let my words show you what you would have seen. But Alice Caldwell Rice pictures someone, and she says, it ain't no use putting up your umbrella till it rains. I changed that slightly when I used that statement of hers. It's like putting up an umbrella inside a building. Now, that's even more foolish looking. and growing up in cities that have sunshine and living in states that have a lot of sunshine, a lot of people use an umbrella for shade. When they go on a walk, they'll carry an umbrella to keep the sun off of their face. And so I didn't want to have to deal with that if I opened an umbrella in the building. But just picture yourself opening an umbrella metaphorically inside of how foolish that looks. And that's what worry is. It's what worry is. And here's the thing that got my attention. It's a statement that Simon Patrick made over 300 years ago. Historians have recorded this for us. Worry is to distrust God. Foremost, first and foremost, is to distrust God. Because you're troubled about what is to come. So you don't trust God about what's to come, of Him taking care of what's coming. You don't trust Him. I feel strange even saying that out loud. I would feel stranger if I lived that way, that I don't trust God about my future. It's also impatience against God, because you're troubled about what is present. Why haven't you taken care of this? Now. God, now. Worry is impatience with God's in dealing with the present. And worry is also sometimes anger toward God, because we're troubled about the past. You didn't handle it right. I don't like what you did or didn't do in my past. And so I'm distrustful of the future. I'm impatient with the present. Three characteristics of our mind, they deal with past, present, and future, he suggested. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Does God have an interest in us? How do we know that He does?
He knows the hairs on our head.
He knows the number of hairs on our head. They're numbered. Each one has a number. Not counted, they're numbered. We talked about that before, months ago now. What proof of His love for you is the ultimate proof? Yes, Tristel? No, you go ahead. God sent His Son while we were yet sinners. Not when we behaved ourselves, not when we had everything worked out, not when we were just on the edge of being everything that we could be. He sent His Son for us. Rick? Yeah. Yeah. Stories of the Old Testament, Noah and the Ark, and others of His affections, Brian? Yeah. Yeah, He makes His will known to us. He reveals Himself to us. He has the power. He has the love. And He has a past with us as far as proving Himself to us. What's the problem? Why don't we just stop class now and do better? Let's just do better. We have the past. We have the conviction by writings, writers, scripture. Why do we still worry? Paul uses a phrase that I think we're probably all guilty of, hopefully in varying measures. It will show itself. You would be able to see yourself when we see what he says. But he says, verse 11, I'm not saying this because I am in need. And he was grateful for their expressing their concern while in prison with gift a gift that they had sent. But he said, I'm not saying this because I'm in need, though you showed your concern, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. That multi-million dollar word, contentment. I laugh after several weekends of sporting events when I tell Terry, I've got to give in. I've been seeing commercials for 3 weekends in a row, and I've got to go eat something. It's Applebee's or Arby's or something. We see it, and we don't need it. But with repeated advertisement, what are they telling me? What are the advertisements of anything telling you about yourself? This is something you deserve. That's a whole different aspect. Not something you need. I think they've left that behind decades ago. This is something you deserve. You deserve this. Doesn't matter what the cost. Doesn't matter the calories. Doesn't matter whatever it is. You deserve this. And what is it that they work on to cause us to get in the car and go get it? A lack of contentment, of being satisfied with what I have, of a satisfaction with what I have. And that's not suggesting that we can't go buy something, that we can't exchange something, or we can't upgrade something. But Paul said, I learned contentment. I learned to be satisfied with what I had, where I was, because of God in my life. It was because of God in his life. And it's something to be learned. How many of us are still working on it? You know, in some areas, we're still working on it. Some of you need to move more often. Now, that's a bold statement for me to say to you. But here's what you learn when you move, if you'll learn the lesson. If you've been somewhere for 2 or 3 years and you've not used something, do you need to pack it and take it to the next place? Of course I do. I might need it there. Wendy?
How about the box is still packed from the last move?
Yes. Tara and I, because we've moved a few times and we went to China for 2.5 years with 2 or 3 footlockers each total, you find out if I haven't used it in 2 or 3 years, give it away. Have a garage sale. Take it to Goodwill. And if you've moved and it's been a few years and you haven't unpacked it, Wendy has just confessed, why would you move it again? And the answer is because there I might need it. And that's what I've heard some of us say. I can't throw it away because that's when I'll need it. And teachers are the worst. Tristel, am I right? Kindergarten teachers are the worst because they may need that visual that they've used in the past. They might need that visual or that packet with that perfect lesson put together. If you haven't for a while, maybe you're not going to use it. Maybe you don't need it. Maybe it's okay to pass it on. Wendy's going to confess some more this morning. Yeah. To a teacher that's teaching now at a place that has kindergarten students. Okay? Or whatever. Figure it out. Figure it out. I've already given away at least 9 boxes of books in the 14-plus months we've been here. Most of my library is digital, and my sermons and things are on my computer, and if I need to print something, I can, but I've been giving them out. I took five boxes to Tahoe when I went. I've been to Searcy twice and met a minister from that area and given him, on two different occasions, 4 boxes of books. 8 is filling his library, and I'm sure his wife is saying, when are you going to use all those? But he might use them. I was thankful to be able to pass them on. Evan, are you trying to say something? I think I just saw your hand. Thank you for being patient with me. Absolutely. Yeah. And what Jesus did in those two parables, Matthew 25, is be ready. He just was saying, be ready. I'm coming back. Be ready. And it's worth a concern. It's worth an introspection to be certain that you're ready. But not worry. Not worrying about it. Because, again, past, present, or future, what does it say to your relationship to God if worry is one of the main habits of your life? I heard a comment. Okay. Say, I'm missing the worry. Yeah, it's a lack of trust. It's just a lack of trust to put several ideas together. Someone asked the question, was Paul a thermometer or a thermostat? You know the difference? A thermometer registers the temperature. And if you're trying to see if someone has a temperature, and you can use that to determine whether they're sick or not and what medicines to prescribe, a thermometer has a great value. It measures the temperature. A thermostat sets the temperature. It sets the temperature. Now, I'm going to chase a rabbit for a moment. I haven't noticed it here, so I can feel very comfortable knowing that one of you is not going to hit me over the head with a songbook at the end of class. Several places where I've been, people who are uncomfortable with the temperature in the building will go to the thermostat, and here's the worst thing you can do. Turn it back about 8 degrees, or turn it forward about 8 degrees. It's way too much. We locked the thermostat boxes, if you will, in Florida, so people couldn't adjust them. We moved into a new building, and they said, let's just put a lock on them. And the person in charge of the thermostat can set them accordingly. And today, and it's been that way for 30 years, you can buy thermostats that you can preset to where you don't need to touch it. And it's just amazing. We don't understand the two. Paul was a thermostat. He set the conditions, if you will. He taught that principle in Philippians 4 about being anxious. Don't be anxious about anything, but in all circumstances and in everything, give God your prayers and your petitions and your thanksgiving. Give it to God in prayer. and let him take care of it. And have confidence that he cares, he has the power, and he will, on his timing, take care of that situation. And that last statement is important, on his timing. It might not happen by 4:30 this afternoon. It may not come as quickly as we would like. But Paul is laying that before us. I saw a hand, Tom.
One thing I have noticed is that I've met people that are big worriers. They have a similar issue about dwelling in the past.
Yeah. Yeah,
which you can't change. You can learn from. You can learn from the past, but you can't change it. And you can put what you learned in dealing with the future. But sometimes those things are unchangeable. You certainly don't have control. Let's pull, at least for a moment, the four chapters together. We looked at the single mind, circumstances, the joy stealer in chapter 1. We looked at the submissive mind in chapter 2, and looking out not at our interest, but to the interest of others, and how sometimes we let people steal our joy. 2 weeks ago, the spiritual mind, this mind in me, Christ is first and foremost in Paul's thinking. But of course here it's the secure mind. We can have some security in our life that doesn't waver with anxiety or worry. And it's inherent that we think the way we should. Finally, verse 8, whatever is true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Now, I heard as a teenager, garbage in, garbage out. That doesn't apply in the purest sense or the fullest sense here, but the principle is there. What we think about is going to affect what we are concerned about. It's going to affect our life. And are you thinking about things that are actual, true, things that are honorable or noble, things that are right, another idea of things that are just, things that are pure? I encourage us to watch less news. And I encourage you to read headlines and don't read the first 9 paragraphs. Be aware without letting some of the details get in. Because there's some pretty horrible things happening in our world, in our neighborhood, in our community. Be aware. Have common sense. Be safe. But don't dwell on so much of the horrible to where that affects you more than it should. Be aware of it and pray about it. Pray that all individuals who are in those circumstances will find the love of God in their life. That they will come to realize what's right and definitely what's wrong. We can respond to information without letting it get in and affecting us. Some people can't sleep at night. There was another school shooting, a mall shooting yesterday. There was a mall shooting. I don't want the details. I'm aware of things in my world. I'm glad it was in another state, but I wish it were nowhere. And be aware without letting it get in to where you're losing sleep. And you're not thinking of things that meet this criterion of true and noble and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about those things. And whatever you have learned, verse 9, or received or heard from me or seen in me. Paul is saying, you've heard me preach and you've seen my life. Put into practice those things and let the God of peace be with you. Let the God of peace be with you. That's a major point of this chapter. What did he begin with? We didn't read the first few verses. Listen to verse 2. He's writing from prison. Imagine Euodia and Syntyche hearing a prisoner write this to you. I plead with Euodia and I plead with Syntyche to agree with each other in the Lord. And I hope they thought, oh no, Paul found out about our disagreement. And he must know that we haven't worked it out. And he's concerned about us, not worried. He's concerned. And from prison, he has to spend his time writing about me. Not a pretty picture. Not a pretty picture. But he felt the need. And I'm sure the Christians at Philippi were thankful. Paul, thank you for telling them what they should have already known. Thank you. And it's being read in 2023. The whole world, for centuries forward, not the people, but the circumstance. Learn from the circumstance. People that can't agree, and he's encouraged them to agree with each other. Yes, and I ask you, loyal yoke fellow, help these women who have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. Names in the book of life considered against two women that can't agree, and I've got to write and encourage that. And then, rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Paul had a reason for writing every single word that he wrote. And we're not certain what may have been behind that set of words. Rejoice, certainly. James, Peter, others say similar things. But let your gentleness be evident. The Lord is near. Were the two ladies being harsh to one another, perhaps? Again, the positive has a negative that maybe brought it about. And the Lord being near, I would suggest, might be an inference to give these things to God. Don't be so hard on each other. The Lord is near. Let Him help you to deal with it better. Again, we're not certain of the reasoning behind some of these. Look at verses, look at words, make comments. We don't have but about 11 minutes. Stan? Sure. Yep. Stan shares with those who are listening and watching online of the recommendation by some in the past going through anxiety and depression, encouraged to write letters of thanksgiving. Be thankful for people in your past who've helped make you who you are. the other side of that, the inference is, instead of thinking about those things from your past that are difficult, highlighting only the hard times, but be thankful. Be thankful and express it. And he's certainly encouraging that. I think he's also giving us a prayer hint. God wants to hear from us as his children. And when we pray, words like petitions and prayer, tell him the things that are concerning you in your life. Tell him in the petitions, tell him the things that you need. Give that list clearly and often. But also be thankful. Don't always be asking, but also be saying thank you for what you've done. Thank you for answering that prayer and helping that person or helping me in my situation that I've been praying about. So the petition and prayer is one thing, and the thanksgiving should be part of it. It's part of that two-way street. He's giving, and we're being thankful for those gifts. He's analyzing and helping and solving as we petition, and prayer is somewhat general, but it's talking to God, giving things to God, being aware of God. And not doing it after we've worked for 2 weeks to solve it ourselves. Give it to him right away. Give it to him right away. Your life will be much easier for those next 2 weeks, is the inference. Other ideas or words that jump out, Ann? Yes, yes. Yeah, and we touched on that in another concept earlier in another class, but the seven spirits, we wipe our house clean, and the seven spirits are driven out metaphorically, but we don't refill the house. And Anne's comment, when we deal with the worry or anxiety properly, we've got to fill that void, that time that we used to do that, fill it with good. And that's where the thanksgiving and the right thinking. Fill that void that you're no longer using for worry and anxiety. Fill that void. Going back to chapter 3, look out for the welfare of others. Who can you reach out to that might be going through something similar? You let God deal with it, and you reach out to others with your calls or your cards in being a resource from God to others. As he's helped you, you help them. It's that comfort circle of 2 Corinthians 1. Carrie? Yeah. There are people that desperately need to rechannel their thought processes and quit being so negative. Quit being so negative. Some of that is because of the way we think. We think about negative things too often. Some of that is because we're not giving those things to God and letting Him change them around, letting Him make it better for us. But it is a learning process. Most of us still working on it. Tristel? Yes.
And what I mean by that, when we think about helping others or thinking about God and thinking back on what He has, you've got to replace those thoughts with godly thoughts or good thoughts. Because when you tell yourself, oh, I'm not going to eat that, I'm not going to eat that, what do? You want to eat that. So when you give it away and give it to God and replace it with those godly thoughts, you can only think one thought at a time.
Yeah.
So it just helps us.
I need my pen to be writing some of this. You may be dealing with the birds around you metaphorically, but don't let those birds build a nest. Thank you for that. And we can't think but one thought at a time. Let them be positive. Let them be you being mindful of others instead of concentrating on yourself. And certainly, this is the scary part. I believe it, but I fail as often as you do, I'm sure. We decide in the first moments when we wake up every day whether it's going to be a good day or not. Now, there are those who have issues and medication helps, and it's a real mental issue. And I'm thankful for those who can help when we have those circumstances. But at some point, also, we decide whether it's going to be a good day or not. Our outlook determines the outcome, Wiersbe says. Our outlook determines outcome. And our attitude determines altitude as far as our relationship with God. So I've remembered those two things from his writings for 30-plus years. And they're true. It's true. Get up tomorrow or go back, lay in bed, and get up again. And decide this is going to be a better day. I'm going to look at it and this is going to be a better day. Not perfect. We'll still have difficulties living in this world. And we'll talk about that principle in our sermon this morning. But we have control over a lot of things. And it's important that we take that control. Philip Parson tells a story, Philip Parham, I'm sorry. It's a rich industrialist who was disturbed to find a fisherman sitting lazily beside his boat. "Why aren't you out there fishing?" he asked. "Because I've caught enough fish for today," he replied. "Why don't you catch more fish than you need?" "What would I do with them?" "You could earn more money," came the impatient reply, "and buy a better boat so you could go deeper and catch more fish." Excuse me. "You could purchase nylon nets, catch even more fish, and make more money. Soon you'd have a fleet of boats and be rich like me." And the fisherman said, "Then what would I do?" "You could sit down and enjoy life." What do you think I'm doing now? More, more, more. We find ourselves saying that often to one person in our life who just sometimes could not be pleased with what they had, where they were, what they had, and they wanted more. And it's not a good look. If we want more, 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 unless it's more love of God in our life. Thank you.